team. How'd you like that today? They did a pretty good job with those announcements, huh? A lot of creativity. Did a great job. As Bob, as my good friend with the radio voice, Bob Fonrich, told us, we need to sign up for that mini conference. And I need you here this weekend. A lot of what we're going to be talking about today has to do with that. Don't worry about the rollers there, guys. Just bring it on up as is. But we need you here. And I'm going to try to weave a little bit today of that into where we're going today with the message. Because I realize that many of you are like, you know, some of you are scared of this thing called a mini conference. You don't want to do it. It's out of your comfort zone. You got something else to do on Friday night, you know. And really, the only excuse for you to miss anything this week is if you're going to be watching the season premiere of 24 tonight. That's the only legitimate excuse that anybody has about anything this week, all right? Jack Bauer's back, and so that means that we're in for a wild ride over the next 4 months or so. So I'm really pumped up about that. But anyway, and then my wife goes and schedules a birthday party for my daughter tonight. Can you get over that? I got to find a way to get everybody out of the house, you know, so... Huh? No, you don't TiVo, Jack. You know, real time, baby. Click, click, tick, tick, tick. Don't you know? You got to watch it in real time. Yeah, you got to watch it in real time. But anyway, you know, I bring that, I don't know why I bring that up, but I bring the mini conference up because it's such a big deal for us. And I want us to understand why this is so critically important right now at this point in time in our lives. And as we go through the message today, I hope that will become a little clearer. But before I go there, I want to real quickly review for those of you who might not have been able to be here last week. And by the way, this is an incredible long weekend crowd. Thank you for being here today. I mean, it rained and everything. You could have had all kinds of excuses to do something else, but you're here. Thank you. I appreciate that so much. And I do hope that we will match this and even exceed this out of this group that calls 845 their primary congregation or their primary service. I hope we'll match that and even exceed it Friday and Saturday. You see, one of the reasons that we are doing this is because we understand, as we talked about last week, that many people, when they hear about the opportunity to go from where they are today, let's call that A, to B, which is some future state out there somewhere, they often say something like, yeah, that sounds great to me. As a matter of fact, God has a wonderful plan for your life. I don't know of too many sincere Christ followers who wouldn't say, yeah, that's a great thing. You heard what Sandra read this morning in Jeremiah 29, one of those linchpin verses when it comes to the idea about God's direction and the fact that he has an awesome plan for you. Well, you know, A to B for many people can be something that causes us to be really excited about. You know, it sounds great, but then we get into what we talked about last week, this phase of time between the old and the new. Remember what we called it? Don't look on the board. You're cheating. What is it? What do we call it? What was it? The neutral zone, right? We get in the neutral zone, and it's in the neutral zone between the old and the new that what happens? We begin to experience these little things called transitions. And these little transitions are the things where we go, we make a little progress, we'll take a step back. We'll make a little progress, take a couple steps back, make a lot of progress, take a little step back, you know, kind of go on a slope of progress for a while, et cetera, da, da, da. But it's here where we ask that question that you just saw at the close of that video. The question being, am I willing to pay the price? Am I willing to pay the price to do what? To move from A to B. Why? Because it's not as simple. It's just riding this slide here, this slope upward. It's doing the little things here and there that cause us to get to B. It's what defines B as hard work. It's what defines, since we're in the NFL playoffs right now, the idea of the Colts, who are my team, winning the Super Bowl the first year. It sounded great, yeah? But when you see they've got to play teams like who they had to play last night, as tough as they are, Baltimore, right? It makes these things so much more difficult, and it makes you appreciate what it takes really to get to be. Well, there's no difference in your life and my life at an individual basis. There's no difference between that and where we are as a church. It's great to think about how we can get from here to there, but you know what? It's tough sometimes to think about all this stuff that has to go on in between, because the question has to be, are we willing to pay the price? Am I willing to pay the price? Well, we looked at last week at the fact that in the neutral zone, there are four reactions that people typically can elicit, they can exhibit. And when God has us in this place, somewhere between the old and the new, typically there are four things that people do. The first of those is they'll get on board. Some will get on board. Many people will get on board. They're thinking that, hey, you know, going from A to B is worth it. It's worth it. I'll have some little setbacks in here. I'm not going to like everything everybody's going to say to me. You ever had that problem before? Okay. I'm going to think sometimes I'm being slighted a little bit. I'm going to get a little selfish. I'm going to get a little sensitive sometimes. Not us, right? No, we're above that, right? That's part of the price we got to pay. Because guess what? We're all humans. And until we're all Jesus, I doubt real seriously that this journey is going to be without problems. Okay? So, we can get on board. Another logical approach is to push back. Push back can be a great thing. It can be wonderful. As long as I understand that just because I feel some particular way, that should not necessarily cause everybody else to change their position on account of me. Okay? All right, if I can get there, okay? It's okay to push back. Why? Because push back is always good for what? Understanding. Okay? And if God's leading the process, and in a church like ours where we're yours, God, you know, we trust that we're kind of doing our part in prayer and preparation and that kind of thing. I want you to come next weekend to the mini conference, for example, prayed up, ready to go. Understanding what Sandra read this morning about Jeremiah 29:11. Understanding the story we're going to talk about today. Understanding what happened in 2 Kings 21 through 25 as we looked at it over the past couple of weeks, as we looked at the cost of clarity, what it takes to get there. And so we can push back for understanding. Many folks are going to decide once they try those things, they push back, they just can't get there, they have to quit and leave. There's a good way to leave and there's a bad way to leave. Okay? It's a good way to leave and a bad way. Good way of leaving is always being honest up front about everything and being godly and It never ceases to amaze me about how, you know, after years, people who have, and you know, when people, you feel like people leave you, you know, your friendship or whatever the case might be, sometimes if there's no closure, you kind of feel like still kind of hung out to dry. Does that make sense? I didn't say clothesline hung out to dry, but closure. You know, if there's no closure, you kind of, what happened? You know, what's that? What's that all about? So there's a right way to leave and not so good a way to leave. So some people will quit and leave. And if we do it the right way, that's great. But as we said, the fourth option that so many people choose to take in their Christian life, in their church, in their business, where they work, in athletic teams they support or they play on, they quit and stay. They quit and stay. And those are the ones that do the most damage. They're the ones in Christianity who are just there going to church on Sunday morning, and it's a nominal lifestyle. It's a lifestyle that says, I'm going to show up and I'm going to get my, you know, people are going to see me, so they're going to think that I'm okay this week, that I'm a growing Christ follower, or that I'm secure in who I am. It's the people in churches who decide, you know, I'm not going to really get involved. I'm just going to go. I'm just going to be there, and, you know, if I don't like something, I'm surely going to tell somebody about it, though. I'm going to let them know. But you know what? It's usually not the person that can do anything about it. You know? Have you noticed that? And that's the way we handle conflict a lot of times. That's what's natural. We choose to go outside the circle of influence to somebody else in order to do what? Build our own little coalition. Have you noticed that? We like little coalitions. We like people to feel like we do. I've heard this morning already of some complaints. You know what? And it came from somebody else who was not even in the circle of influence that somebody else said about somebody else. You know? And I thought, wow, whoever said that, you gave me great sermon material today, so you know who you are, so thanks. Just don't let it happen again, okay? That's the way it is. So, you know, this whole thing about doing things the right way is important. So that's what we want to talk about. And so our goal as a body, as we move into this event next weekend, is to get more clarity. And as we move through the message today, we're going to look at Nehemiah, as I promised you last week. And I want us to strive for a Nehemiah experience this weekend. I really do. And that's why I need all of you here. Some of you might feel disengaged, and that might be okay with you. That concerns me. Did you hear what I said? You might feel disengaged. That concerns me. And not that you feel engaged, that concerns me too, but it concerns me more that you might like it and that might be comfortable for you. I don't want that. We need you here. So what we're going to do today is begin to look at a process that God took Nehemiah through. And this process was one that I think not only revolutionized his world and the world of Judah, those who would go back to Jerusalem out of the captivity from Babylon that we talked about last week, but rather it would revolutionize, I think, the way that pioneering Christian leaders would look at this whole idea about moving forward, about finding clarity and moving into the clarity, no matter what the transitions would mean and no matter the price or the cost, whatever you want to call it, that would be associated with that forward movement. So, having said that, I want you to go in your Bibles, and we can go ahead and go with the house lights now if we want to, we can go to Nehemiah chapter 1. It's a good place to start, right? If you're going to go to Nehemiah, start chapter 1, right? It's a good one. Now, up at the top of your outline, you've got a verse there that comes out of the King James Version in Proverbs, Proverbs 29. The writer of Proverbs says basically this: where there is no vision, the people perish. And what does perish mean? Die. Now, does that mean a physical death? Not literally. What it means is an emotional, spiritual, mental type thing, basically, that happens when there is no ambition, when there is no nothing, there is no forward movement inspiring some people, then what happens? Our motivation dies. Motivation dies. For many people in the world, you know many people, and I know many people too, their motivation has died. There is none. There is nothing right now that is going on that they feel like they can hang their hat on and that really causes them to want to make a difference in an influential way. As we saw in the little video a few moments ago, that a part of seeing with clarity what that allows us to do is to maximize our influence. See, that's what I think. If you really were to put down, okay, God, what is it you really want me to do? I think that everybody can agree that, you know, whatever we do, we've got to maximize our influence. That's God's plan for us. We maximize it. We blow it out of the water, so that more and more people can come to a relationship with Him. Now, let me real quickly bring you up to date from our story in 2 Kings last weekend to where we are today in Nehemiah. And I hope we had time to get these on the screen. I think I sent them in. I don't know if we got them or not. Ron, did we get that first set on the historical background? Did you have a chance to get those? Ron always does a good job with his stuff, as Pete does, and they just are wonderful. If you didn't get it, don't worry about it. Let me tell you what happens. Last week, we talked about the siege of Jerusalem, remember, in Judah. In the year, you know, sometime in the year 605 or so, we saw Nebuchadnezzar come, right? And so what happened was, at that point, all the nation was carried off into Babylonian captivity up in Babylon, okay, and modern-day Iraq. So that's where the Jews were. Judah, the southern kingdom, was left just decimated. And then in 540, King Cyrus of Persia defeated the Babylonians. All right, Nebuchadnezzar was long gone as king by then. Numerous kings had come to lead the Babylonian Empire, but under the leadership of this guy named Cyrus, the Persians came and they overtook Babylon. Now, modern day Persia is largely known as what today, territorially? Iran, right? Iran. So now, you know, the cultures were different. Medes. There was a country called Media in there that had somewhat of a Christian heritage that was kind of like the Medo-Persian Empire is what we would know it to be. But by the way, the interestingly enough, the descendants of the Medians or the Medes are at least a portion of them today, as we know it, are the modern day Kurds. Okay, you've heard of the Kurds in Iraq. So. So this whole deal in 540 was a big turning point, because 70 years, just about 70 years have passed since this captivity. Well, guess what prophecy said? Prophecy says, God said to his people before the captivity in Babylon, that you will be in captivity for how many years? For 70 years, because for 490 years, you did what? You ignored the observance of the Sabbath, according to my laws. Now, over the course of 490 years, how many Sabbath years would there have been? 70. Math whizzes, 490 divided by 7. 70. So God says, for every year that you disobeyed and failed to observe my Sabbath law, that's how long your captivity is going to be. So is it just coincidence that Cyrus and the Persian Empire would overtake the Babylonians and they would have such a sweet spirit, maybe not a sweet spirit, but certainly an engaging spirit toward the captives who had been there 70 years. And so this year in 540, Cyrus allows this leader named Zerubbabel, okay? He's the name for whom we get bubble bath, all right? Zerubbabel took back a group of exiles between 40 and 45,000. Now, this was the first major migration back to Judah since the captivity. Now, this was a really big deal. And so then they go to work, first of all, toward the temple. And in 537, in just 3 years, they're able to get the altar repaired, which was a big deal with all the with the way the town had been decimated. But in 535, further work on the temple stops due to the opposition around. Now, here's a problem. Here's a problem. Nobody around Judah wanted Judah to rebuild. Why was that? Because while they had their own gods that they were worshiping, there was this really particular fear of this God named Yahweh that was the God of the Jewish people. The other things, for political reasons, they felt that a rising Jewish state would take away their influence and perhaps overtake them and make them subjects, servants, paying tribute, taxes, etc., to that Jewish empire. So they didn't want it to happen. So in 535, the work stops. Then finally in 520, King Darius has taken over the throne from Cyrus, another good king in the Persian Empire, and he authorizes the continued work on the temple, and he tries to make provision for that to continue and to move forward. Well, in 516, the temple's completed. 516, the temple's completed. And then life kind of begins to go on. Not a lot of economic rebuilding in Judah or anything like that, but the temple's there, and it becomes operational for those who have gone back, the 40 to 50,000, a pretty formidable group, right? But you know what? Zerubbabel and Tom, his leadership fades, he passes on, and there's not a lot of leadership there. So Ezra is a great teacher who is still among the exiles. He obviously was not one of the original exiles because he would have, not been around at that point in time. But around the year 458, the king, Darius, but the king at that point, right before Xerxes, allowed him to bring back another 5,000 exiles. And so they go back to Jerusalem and they get to work now on the city. Now, the work is slow because what Ezra does, for the most part, remember he's a teacher, he's not a builder, he's not a big-time leader kind of guy, but he brings this charismatic type influence and he begins to motivate the people. And so we see some good things happening in society, although there is very little written about this period between 458 and 13 years later when Nehemiah bursts on the scene. And then in 448 to 445. And so then we see in 445 Nehemiah coming along. And we pick up the story in verse 1. And here's what it says. These are the memoirs of Nehemiah, son of Hakaliah. In late autumn of the 12th year of King Artaxerxes' reign, I was at the fortress of Susa. Hanani, one of my brothers, came to visit me with some other men who had just arrived from Judah. I asked them about the Jews who had survived the captivity and about how things were going in Jerusalem. Now, Let me give you a definition for clarity, if we haven't already in this message series. Clarity, and I want you to get this, clarity. Now, what is clarity? It's the ability to see where. It's the ability to see there. But you know what? This by itself is not good enough. Clarity also incorporates the understanding that this stuff's going to happen too. And that in spite of this, I'm willing to go there. Make sense? What is clarity? Clarity is the desire and the ability to see the big picture of God's preferred future for me. That's what it is. It's the desire and the ability to see what? The big picture of God's preferred future for me. What does it look like? We want to help you craft it. We want to help you understand. We want to understand what it looks like for a church. That's why it's very important. God, you know, as you know, up at the top of your outline, I just gave you the words from our vision statement that God kind of made clear to us in 2005. You know, we've pretty much done all those things. It's time to get on to the next phase. Okay? It kills me when I walk into churches or organizations and I see vision statements or mission statements and I'll say, how long's that been your mission statement? Oh, about 25 years. When are you going to get it done? It's the question that comes to my mind. When are you going to get it done? Guess what? Missions were made to be completed and accomplished, right? I mean, there's a reason, and in the old Mission Impossible TV series, that at the beginning of every week, what happened? The crew got a brand new mission assigned, and there is a reason that by the end of the episode, what had happened? It was completed. And there is a reason that at the beginning of the next week's episode, what else happened? They got a new one. That's what life is to be. We are not supposed to have this big, blurry idea about the future then where nothing ever gets accomplished. But yet, that's how many of us live our lives. We'll say we have this mission statement or this vision, but you know what? We never do anything about it. A vision is a series of missions that have to be accomplished. And the accomplishment of the vision is the cumulative effect of those missions accomplished. You got that? So if you don't have some missions accomplished in your life, chances are you're not moving toward the fulfillment of God's preferred future for you. Now, it's always best to start backwards and get an idea of what that preferred future looks like so that we can do what? We can craft the missions to make sure that they lead us toward fulfillment of that vision. Does that make sense? Well, clarity is the desire and the ability to see the big picture of God's preferred future. We need to have a personal big picture, and we need to have what? A corporate big picture as a church. Hopefully, your place of employment has a big picture of what the future should look like for them. Because if you don't have something you're moving toward, you may not be moving forward. As we sung earlier, we may not be moving forward. So, what is a vision about? Well, if clarity is that desire and the ability to see that big picture, I kind of define vision as the word that talks about that picture. It's a compelling picture that depicts what could be and what should be in that future. What could be and what should be. Now, I believe that God has given us three different types of people in the human race. I believe He's given us dreamers, developers, and doers. Okay? The dreamers are those who like to dream big. They drive many of you crazy because they're only about 10% of those in all population. Very few. Very few people are real dreamers, okay? We just typically don't think that big. And one of the things at many conferences we're going to do this weekend is help you with a brief personality assessment that's going to help you figure out where you might fall on this continuum. You know why? Because all three of these people are equally important. The kingdom of God. The second group of people are the developers. Now, let me say this. The third group of the people are the doers. You got the dreamers and you got the doers. In the middle somewhere, though, there's this group of people who interpret the dreams so the doers can get it done. Does that make sense? The developers are the interpreters. You got the dreamers, you got the interpreters, you got the doers. The doers are the people who just want to say, look, just tell me what you want me to do. Get out of my way. I'll get it done. And you know what? Those people usually will. Many of you fall in that category. Churches are built on the doers. Okay? Churches fall when they're only dreamers that influence. They fall. Because here's what happens. When you only have a dream, but you have no way of knowing how to get there, stays a dream. Never moves beyond that. And it frustrates. It frustrates. Now, in our many conferences over the past 3-4 years, we've been focusing on the interpretation of what God has been saying to us over the past few years. Guess what? We're going back to the drawing board next weekend. We're saying, okay, God, what's the next big picture? Because what do we say? There's always a next big step. We're going to come together and we're going to ascertain together what that next big step is. Everybody's input's important, whether you're a dreamer, a developer, or a doer. Because we all got to work together to make it happen, right? In the power of God, through the Holy Spirit. So, here's a few things. Vision comes gradually. Guess what? You know what? You got to work through the neutral zone to get to the point to where we can do that. That's one of the things that we need to understand. Well, Nehemiah, we're going to look at his evolution into a vision that he had. And so I want to talk for a moment about his story and give you 4 real quick progressive stages around this thing called clarity and vision. Because I believe that this progression is seen in Nehemiah chapter 1. And I believe if we understand the process that God took him through, a process that I believe is very natural, I believe that we will have an easier time getting a hold of that which God has for us in our preferred future. So follow along with me. 4 relatively simple key concepts, but I want you to understand the progression as we move forward. Here's the first. Vision is birthed from, first of all, an obstacle. Usually, it's an obstacle. We see in the first couple of verses how Nehemiah got the word that there was discouragement back in Judah. Nothing was happening. There was no forward movement. And for whatever reason, we don't really know why, but it was Nehemiah who took this upon himself. Conditions back there might not have been as bad as he had heard. We don't know. But whatever the case might be, whatever he was told, God used that to create a sense of an obstacle. There's an obstacle here. Nehemiah he wanted to see Judah rebuilt to its prior glory. And when he heard that nothing was going on, here's the word. Here's in verse 3. This is what he got as far as the survey of the land there in Judah. They said to me that things are not going well for those who return to the province of Judah. They're in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem has been torn down and the gates have been burned. So what is happening? This opposition now is coming in and they're trying to tear down the progress that had been made by those that had come back under Zerubbabel and under Ezra. So that was a big deal. There's an obstacle. There is something that is not happening that should be happening. About 13 and a half years ago, some youth leaders at a church across town who happened to be on my youth leadership team because I was a youth pastor came to me and said, you know what, we think that God is really kind of pointing us towards starting something new here in this town that nobody else is doing as far as the church goes. And we kind of feel like he's told us to ask you to lead it. And so I said, okay, let me pray about it. So 30 seconds later, I came back and said, okay, let's do it. It's basically how it started. Let's do it. That's my pray about it. 30 seconds, okay. Because when God begins to prepare your heart with common ideas and themes with other people, guess what? There's a pretty good chance that he's got something going on that's coming from him. Okay? Pretty good chance that something needs to happen there. Well, you know, I don't know if if you've lived here for a long time or whatever the case might be, but one of the things that became abundantly clear to us is that this vision of how God would have us to do church was something that nobody else was doing at that point. Now, there were good churches or great churches around here, but nobody was doing it quite like we're. Now there's a lot of churches around here that kind of do it sort of like we did. But what I'm proud of is that I consider us to be trailblazers in the area. I really do. And there's some things about trailblazers you got to understand that we'll talk about that today and some next week. But you know what? There had to be a trailblaze. Now, a trail's kind of like this. You know, can I flip this? I don't know what's on the back. I take a risk by doing this. I see the name Stephen on here, so I'm a little bit concerned about what might be on the other side. Should I be Stephen? Should be. All right. But it's upside down. You see, here's what I think of, and I didn't realize at that point in time that this is really what God was calling us to be, kind of a trailblazer, kind of prepare the way kind of deal. Because, you know, there's an eraser. Okay, good. Just want to race. All right, that's good. But anyway, you catch my drift, right? All right. We're talking about football right now, right? All right. Now, this maneuver in a football game is now illegal, which I don't understand. There's parameters placed around it. But whenever there's a kickoff, typically, I remember when we played football out in the yard, you know, when I was a kid, we would, in order for the kickoff run, the run back to be maximized, those of us who would not be running the ball would form what? A wedge, right? Here's the one that doesn't work. Let's get rid of that one. Okay, sorry, Nicole. So here's what happens. In a wedge, you've got the kick returner right here, right? And in a wedge, you've got everybody kind of lining up like this, right, to move through the kickoff defense team, right? 6, 7, yeah, I think that's right. How about that? I do that right. I know I should have been a coach. So what they do is, the idea is that this group moves forward to do what? To clear space, to clear the way for who? The dude who's carrying the ball. And in the end, if they can take it all the way into the end zone, who wins? The pressure's on y'all today. My team won last night. So anyway. But guess what? If they take it to the house, guess what? Who wins in this scenario? Which of those 11 win? All of them. All of them. All of them win. So you know what I've kind of discovered about our role? We're the wedge. We've been the wedge. Not wedgy, wedge. When you're in the wedge, though, a lot of times you do get wedgies. That has a reality. Thanks for reminding me. Yeah, right. Yeah, we're the wedge. I really kind of think that that's kind of how God has placed us over the years. I didn't know that at that time. If I'd have known it, I might not have said, okay, I'll pray about it, let's do it. I might have said, I don't want wedgies, let's don't do that. But here's the point. By the way, when we started, there had been no new churches started in Burlington in 25 years out of anything other than a split of other churches. Okay, just kind of give you an idea of the lay of the landscape. Very different today. Many new healthy churches have been started and doing great work, okay? Have been transitioned and are doing great work. By the way, please pray for my very good friend and your very good friend, Bob Feltz, okay? Who is one of those pioneers in Burlington as a leader, not only in the church community, but also in the business community, as he is having some very difficult couple of weeks coming up trying to figure out what's going on in his body. So we've told you about the possibilities there, so please lift him up. So, the second thing about vision is birth from an obstacle that ultimately becomes a burden. That ultimately becomes a burden. Now, what is a burden? It's actually one of those churchy words that I actually try to avoid whenever I can, because it conjures up just the idea of somebody just crying their eyeballs out at an altar one Sunday, da da da. And church is much more than that to me. Following Christ is much more different, much more to that than me. A burden comes along when there is something that I call, but it's a term that is pretty widely used, a holy discontent about something. There is a gap. And you know what? That gap really bothers me. There is something that is not happening. And you know what? It really does bother me. It's really a big deal. You see, in verse 4, Nehemiah said, when I heard this, I sat down and I wept. I cried when he heard about what was going on in Jerusalem. For days I had mourned, fasted, and prayed to the God of heaven. You see, one of the things that ignited us was in our church back then, where I was a youth pastor. We started this deal on Sunday night. We did a youth service on Sunday night. We brought in some rock and roll music. We did some, you know, we did some drama and creative things and that kind of thing. It was going really well. And then one Sunday night, somebody looked around in the worship center and said, "Where are all the young people at?" "Oh, they're out in the gym doing their Sunday night deal, the thing they're doing out there." "Well, shouldn't they be in here with us?" So after a successful launch and a really good progress in this particular thing we were doing, I was called in and I was asked to shut it down because everybody needed to be in the worship center together on Sunday night. Well, it turned out that was one of the best things that ever happened to me, because it gave us a little bit of a picture about what could be. It defined for us a gap. And it gave us some impetus to say, you know, why can't what we did for teens out there with that kind of music, that kind of drama, et cetera, why can't that be done for just folks of all ages? Does that kind of make sense? So the holy discontent was there because, you know, I was discontented with the fact, first of all, well, my discontent wasn't very holy because I was probably very angry at that point in time. We had never done it that way before. And so we've got to do it so that we can continue the tradition, okay? So that gave us a little bit more impetus. Now, can I say that that church is one of the healthier churches that I know of? And while it was not in the mission of their church to do that at that point in time, they've thrived. They continue to thrive. They do lots of wonderful things. I have no ill feelings. It's just part of what God used to make himself what? Oh, the other side. Clear, not the wedge. Clear. Make himself clear to us. Okay, forgot I flipped the board. So anyway, the holy discontentedness was there. So we got excited. We saw this thing possibly. And then, you know, that kind of brings us to Nehemiah's next step. There was an obstacle that became a burden that became a passion. The burden led to a passion. He says in verse 5, "O Lord God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps his covenant of unfailing love with those who love him and obey his commands, listen to my prayer. Look down and see me praying day and night for the people of Israel. I confess that we have sinned against you. Yes, even my own family and I have sinned. We have sinned terribly by not obeying the commands, laws, and regulations you gave us through your servant Moses." When does a burden become a passion? When you can't shake it. When you can't shake it. I can't give anything any more scientific than that. When it won't go away. That's when you know it's passion. And you know, that's when you really know that you're going to have to start thinking about what I'm willing to give up in order to get on board with it. And that's exactly what happened with Nehemiah. The fourth step in this whole process is that the obstacle becomes a burden, that becomes a passion, that transforms the obstacle into an opportunity. You see how we're coming full circle here? Because if we leave the obstacle in the obstacle category, we're probably never going to go after it. Those of you who've started companies, those of you who have done something entrepreneurial, you know, you saw something that did not exist, but you know what? You didn't just leave it at that. Todd Felco, who started two churches, I only started one. You know, he didn't just leave it at that. He said, you know what? This obstacle, I can't leave it here. I got to turn it into an opportunity. So the folks who really make things happen are those who take the obstacle, understand that it becomes a burden and a passion, and they allow the passion to inspire them into an opportunity. Opportunities like this don't come along that often. And so the question is, are we going to seize the moment when they do? Nehemiah said, "I'm not letting this one pass. Please remember what you told your servant Moses, God. You told Moses, if you sin, Israel, I'll scatter you among the nations. But if you return to me and obey my commands, even if you are exiled to the ends of the earth, I will bring you back to the place I have chosen for my name to be honored. We are your servants, the people you rescued by your great power and might. O Lord, verse 11, please hear my prayer. Listen to the prayers of those who delight in honoring you. Please grant me success now as I go to ask the king for a great favor. Put it in his heart, O Lord, to be kind to me. So, clarity, which needs to be brought into the realm of this vision, which is what it's a picture of what could be and should be in the preferred future, comes about, first of all, because of an obstacle that becomes what? A burden. It bothers me. I'm discontented. It becomes a passion for me. And you know what? I allow that passion to energize me so much that it becomes an opportunity. The church is full of people on an individual basis who are somewhere on this continuum. Obstacle, burden, passion, opportunity. And you know what? They've stalled. They're stopped somewhere. They've given up. Because of what? Because of the price. There are others of you, and I know who you are. You are still working on this process. You are beating your head up against the next thing. You are trying to make the opportunity come to pass. You've been working at this for years, many of you. It just seems that you haven't really hit a breakthrough yet. Can I encourage you by saying, keep it up. Keep it up. You're the person who's trying, you who are trying to improve your parenting skills. You who are trying to improve your marriage. You who are trying to improve your job situation and bring yourself into a position where you feel like, you know, I can do more. I can do more. You know, I can make more. And that's okay. God honors that, as we talked about last week. As long as you do it with integrity, I can be more. Keep it up. Don't be discouraged. Because you are the people that God is building His kingdom on. You know, my definition of success in church has taken on an incredibly new meaning in the past 13, 14, 15 years as to what it would look like. You know what? But it took me beating my head up against the next step and learning and making mistakes and trying to learn from those mistakes and realizing, you know what, maybe I had the definition of it, what success would be like. Maybe I had it wrong in the first place. Maybe the success is really in the drive that keeps us on the journey from A to B. Maybe, and I'm going to try this again, maybe... Oh, well. Maybe it's when, got it this time, right? Maybe it's when I'm still doing this, even when it seems like the downturns are a whole lot more frequent than I want them to be. Maybe that's what keeps me going. Here's something I want to wish for y'all, okay? Here's what I wish everybody would do. I wish we would spend time over the next few weeks wrestling with some issues. Now, what might those issues be? I want you to struggle with these questions, to lead you to some clarity in your life around what we've been talking about today. Here's the first thing. Here's the first question. What do I care about the most? What do I care about most? What really matters to me? Then why do I care about this? Now, if your answer is, why do I care about most, and the answer is me, you're on the wrong track. I'll tell you that right now, okay? If it's my family and I just alone, you're still on the wrong track. Your mission is, your life mission is more than your family. That's an integral part of it, but it's more to it than that. Why do I care about this? What do I want to see done about this matter? What do I want to see done about it? And finally, how can I influence the outcome? You see, my hope and my desire for you is that you struggle with this issue and that it becomes something that does not let you go. That you discover what it is that you're passionate about, and you discover it by realizing that it's just not going to let me go. I might as well quit trying to ignore it. I might as well quit trying to turn my back on it. You know, I'm not even going to try to tell you what it is, because you know in your heart of hearts what it is. I mean, I personally believe that it is something that is involved in specifically building the kingdom of God rather than our own kingdom. And I believe that in the hearts and the lives of those who are truly trying to follow Christ, that there is that seed there. Many of us choose to ignore it. We choose to let it lie dormant when God wants us to pursue it. So, my prayer is that you will be haunted with these questions until they can be addressed satisfactorily in your life and the obstacles that God lays on you become opportunities that you pursue even when, and your pursuit continues even when it appears that I may not be moving forward. Because it may be that the success is in the forward movement more so than it is our idea of what the end game may look like. God, teach us with the maturity to look at things your way. Cause us to struggle with this thing called clarity and to seek after it until you give it to us. May we pursue holiness and may we pursue you in all that we are.
You know somebody loves you, and small. You never need to carry more than you can hold. And while you're out there getting where you're getting to, I hope you know somebody loves you and wants the same things too. Yeah, this is my wish. This is my wish for you. I hope you know somebody loves you
for you.
Here's the challenge. Bob asked you earlier to fill out your connection cards. If you're willing to say, God, haunt me. God, haunt me with this issue of clarity and these questions. I want you to check where it said, pray for me. I'm accepting God's challenge today. That's what it says there. Just check that. And you know what? The other part of the commitment is this. Will you commit to coming and being part this weekend? Today, yeah, don't tell me if. Don't say, yeah, if. You know what? This is what I used to say about teenagers when I was a youth minister. A maybe from a teenager always meant no. A yes from a teenager always meant maybe. Now, 15 years later, post-youth ministry, you know where I've learned that they got that tendency from? Adults. So don't say if. Don't say maybe. Just say I'm going to do it. Okay? And be here and be a part of this with us. The kingdom needs what God has given you to contribute. And He needs it in a format that's going to allow us to do this together, because that is what Christ's following is all about. The very fate of people hinge on the faithfulness of people to do what God has called them to do, and to do it together in a loving way and in a positive way and in a productive way. These football games we're laughing about. Cowboys aren't going to win today unless all 53 players give it all. And I don't care who you root for. I don't care who you don't root for. It doesn't matter. Because you know what? Unless everybody gives it all, it ain't happening. It ain't happening in the church either. Father, burden us again for the opportunity to turn those obstacles into the opportunities. And may we never quit. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks for being here today. Happy long weekend. Be safe. Be careful. God bless, and don't forget to drop your Integrity Connection cards along with our offerings and tithes. Please don't forget that in the boxes in the back as you leave today. Have a wonderful day and a wonderful week. God bless. Bye-bye.